supposed to talk last week, and Rivka was kind enough to switch with me. I actually was in Poland for a week. I went with the Darchei Bina Seminary, and my parents are both from Poland, and I had never been there at all. And I can tell you it was just a very, very amazing, such an adolescent term, but indeed it was a very, very amazing trip in many, many ways. On one hand, you see the tremendous Kedusha, the tremendous Torah that did exist there. To walk in the Kfarim, you know, to see the Kfarim of the Bach and the Tosfos Yom Tov, Gedolim, that we learn about in Yeshiva. To be in the building of Rav Meir Shapiro, the Yeshiva's Chachmei Lubin, which is totally rebuilt and beautiful. But at the same time, as it's been said, it is essentially a Beis HaKvaris to what was. Rav Meir Shapiro's yeshiva is a magnificent building, but nobody learns Torah there. There's a health club in the basement. It's a museum. The Siyum HaShas of Daf Yomi, there will actually be a ceremony there. So there will be some learning there. So every 7.5 years, there is some Talmud Torah there. So in many, many ways, you see the godless of Torah, but you also see the Chorban of Torah, and just an amazing thing. The other thing is interesting, I don't want to talk about my trip because I do want to talk about Pesach, but I thought something would be worthwhile to share with you, is that many, many Israeli groups there. We were in the Warsaw Ghetto, and there were literally like 10 different Israeli groups and some reform groups from the United States. And if you walk around and eavesdrop a little bit, you actually get a whole summary of all the different hashkafos that exist in Klal Yisrael, the way different people describe different things. That what we would consider very important was totally ignored. What they were emphasizing was something we wouldn't necessarily emphasize. So you see the old story of people looking at the same phenomenon and describing it very, very differently based on their hashkafos. From the secular Israeli perspective, the Warsaw Ghetto, which was physical resistance, is the ultimate symbol of Jewish meaning, that we fought, and although again, I have to say that fighting back was something that Gedolim did encourage, but on the other hand, the concept that the Jews who went to their death like sheep, as they often say derogatorily, is ignoring the notion of the Kiddush Hashem and the like. So it's interesting that we would emphasize different aspects of this. So, well, Baruch Hashem, we have Eretz Yisrael. We don't have a Geula yet, but at least we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not forsake Am Yisrael, and he enabled us to rebuild after the Chorban. I remember Rav Soloveitchik in the 1960s had a year of triple avelus. He lost his brother, his wife, and his mother in the same year. And obviously it was a totally shattering year for him. But at one point he shared a thought that it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu made many worlds before this world, and those worlds were destroyed. Borei olamos umachrivan. And the question is, why didn't God get it right the first time? Why did he make worlds that he destroyed? And he says, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us a lesson, because we have a chiyuv to walk in the ways of God. V'halachta bidrachav. We must emulate Hashem. And Hashem is teaching us that even if our world gets destroyed, we must go on and recreate. Because that, after all, is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. When his worlds were destroyed, he went on and recreated. And that really is the godless of Am Yisrael. You know, if we theologically have a question, which I'm not going to address today, how did a Holocaust happen? How did evil happen? And we kind of blame God for all the bad things that happen in the world. And again, I'm not going to address that very difficult issue of why righteous people suffer. But we also have to give Hashem at least equal credit for the miraculous survival and regeneration of the Jewish people. Because that too is a nes that is lamaila min ateva, that is above nature. That too is something that cannot be explained by historical processes. So if evil is a theological problem, we also have to recognize that the survival and the flourishing of Klal Yisrael is also a theological problem. It makes no sense. You know, there was a British historian, a very famous British historian, Arnold Toynbee. Some of you may from your prior lives may have heard of him. But Arnold Toynbee wrote a masterful work called A Study of History, like a multi-volume work, in which he analyzed 50 or so ancient civilizations. And he was such a master of all history that he was able to chart the factors that determined whether a civilization would survive or disintegrate. And he was able to say, you know, these are the factors which caused the rise and fall of civilizations. And his theory explained 99% of world history. But the one nation that didn't fit his theory was the Jewish people. Because based on all of his data, there shouldn't have been a Jewish people. But there was. It's similar to a famous experiment. This may be apocryphal. They tell us about some graduate students in mechanical engineering concluded that a bumblebee is an impossible creation because based on its weight, flight would be impossible. And they had detailed mathematical formulas to show that the concept of a bumblebee being able to fly was impossible. The only question on that is, well, that's a wonderful theory, but the facts contradict the theory. So intellectuals just say, well, just ignore the facts and we have a wonderful theory. Well, the Jewish people were exactly the same way. They are the bumblebee of world history, meaning Toynbee had a wonderful theory that explained all civilizations, but it didn't explain why there's a Jewish people. So he concluded that the Jewish people are a fossil, meaning just like if you believe in dinosaurs, if you found a dinosaur. And this was a big debate in the 1960s, and I was young, but I read about it later, in which, Toynbee was accused of being an anti-Semite, oh, Jews are fossil, etc. But you know, Laniastati, I would say Toynbee is 100% right, because if Toynbee means to make the point that Jewish survival makes no sense as a matter of history, I would say, indeed, he is correct. There is no sense and rationality to Am Yisrael existing today. It is by Neis, it is by Hashgacha Pratis, it is because of a unique bris. The Maharal writes, that is why a bris is on the eighth day, because the symbolism of eight is that which is above nature, because the natural order of the world is 6 days kept by a Shabbos, eight is Lamala Min HaTeva. God's covenant with Am Yisrael is something that is supernatural. So I don't consider Toynbee anti-Semitic at all. Toynbee basically said, the world operates with historical processes, and Am Yisrael is not connected to those historical processes. Am Yisrael is above and beyond those historical processes. And particularly as we approach Yetzias Mitzrayim and Pesach, we have to remember what Yaakov Emden writes in his Siddur, that if we would think about the miracles of Am Yisrael surviving, whether it's the Crusades or the pogroms, or he wrote obviously before the Holocaust, and we would think about that, that would be a greater miracle, he says, than the 10 Makos and the Kriyas Yamsuf and all of Yetzias Mitzrayim. You know, we ask, why doesn't Hashem do miracles today? But if one is misponing about the survival of Am Yisrael, and once again, and seeing, you know, Auschwitz, Birkenau, seeing the Churban, and seeing it in a very, very vivid way, though those words became more true. That, and when people return to Eretz Yisrael, they commonly say that they want to, what used to be the minhag, it's not so common today, they would fall on the tarmac and kiss the ground. Actually, there's a mukkar in Chazal for that. It says, when the Chachamim would return to Eretz Yisrael from Bavel, they would kiss the rocks, the stones. Whatever, for whatever reason, maybe security, people don't do it today, but that was certainly the feeling that that people had. So it's a very, very powerful term. Again, people debate, the Polish government, which was, not the government, but Poland generally, which was fairly complicit in the extermination of its Jewish population, makes a lot of money off Holocaust groups. Every Israeli public school has a March of the Living. Many seminaries go as well. The question becomes, is that the best place to put the Jewish dollar? All right, one can debate this, but l'chol hapachas, it was a very, very powerful experience. But now we come to Pesach, the Zman of Geula, and it was Shabbos Mevorchin Nissan yesterday. And it is said that Rav Moshe Feinstein was always especially happy, Shabbos Mevorchim of Nisan, because he says, Chazal say, B'Nisan Nigalu, we were redeemed in Nisan, U'B'Nisan Asiden Ligael, and the future redemption shall take place in Nisan as well. And even though it is, of course, one of the 13 principles of faith that Mashiach can come every day, we say, Achake lo b'chol yom sheyavo. So Mashiach can come today, tomorrow, it can come in the month of Av. Nevertheless, there are certain zamanim that are mesugal, that are more fitting, that are better candidates. And the whole month of Nisan is a candidate, a superior candidate for a zman of redemption. And it is also said, Shabbos Mevorchim Rosh Chodesh Iyar, he was sad because he said, Nisan is slipping by and the Geula didn't come. He was so attuned to that idea of feeling the coming of the Mashiach. So what I want to talk a little bit about is Yetzias Mitzrayim, and in particular the structure of the Haggadah. We know that the chiyuv of the Torah to recite the narrative of Mitzrayim is based on a verse. It is actually a chiyuv min haTorah, and that is V'higadata levincha, you shall tell your son, your child, b'yomahu lemor, on the day that you were taken out of Mitzrayim, b'avor zeh asa Hashem li b'tzeisim in Mitzrayim, because of all that God has done for me when I was taken out of Mitzrayim, therefore I am celebrating the Seder. That is why, of course, the narrative is called Haggadah. Where do you get the word Haggadah? Because the source of the mitzvah is V'higadata levincha. That is the pasuk. Now, without getting into all the technicalities, if you read the pasuk literally, it would imply there is only a chiyuv of narration if you have a son or a child. But the Gemara has various drushos that to indicate that even if there's nobody else, even if you have no children, even if you're all by yourself, you're still obligated to narrate this story. Now, I want to start off with a very simple question. The precise text of the Haggadah is not biblically mandated. The Torah says you have to narrate. Theoretically, I could do it in my own words. Right? The Torah does not obligate you in a specific text, nor does the Torah indicate how long that text could be. Arguably, if I simply say, I see some people, if you're less religious, would enjoy a shorter Seder. Let's just say, God took us out of the shrine, let's eat. I know people that might like that type of Seder, but although the other thing, so here's the question. There is an annual mitzvah called Haggadah. But you know there is also a daily mitzvah called Zechira. Every single day we are supposed to mention that Hashem took us out of Egypt. Every single day. Even if you look at the Art Scroll Siddur, you will notice in the Shema, in the third paragraph of Shema, when we say the verse, Ani Hashem Elokeichan, Asher Hotseisi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim, I am the Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt. There's a little asterisk that says, have intention to fulfill the mitzvah of remembering the Exodus. And this is day and night, morning and evening. If you say the Sheish Sefiros, the six things that we're supposed to remember every day, one of them is Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the Kasha that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik used to ask, and he would explain at the beginning of every Seder, well, wait a second here. If every single night and day, night and day, I am obligated to verbally, it's not just mentally, it's verbally, I am obligated verbally to say that Hashem took us out of Egypt, what is the Torah adding on the night of the 15th of Nisan that I already wouldn't have to do anyway? Now, you're going to say, well, yes, but the whole Haggadah. I understand. But the whole Haggadah, the Torah doesn't say you have to say. If the Torah simply says you have to narrate that God took you out of Egypt the 15th of Nisan, but I have that mitzvah the 14th of Nisan, the 13th of Nisan, the 5th of Tishrei, what is the Torah adding with the mitzvah of Haggadah that is not already picked up in the mitzvah of Zechira? again, we're asking it from the perspective of the Torah. What additional, of course, eating matzah, there are, of course, additional obligations, the eating obligations, but I'm talking about the narration obligation. What is the narration obligation adding to me that I wouldn't have to do anyway? Because even if there wouldn't be a mitzvah about that, I have to mention the Exodus. So the man nafkamina.
So Rav Chaim pointed out, there are four structural differences between the mitzvah of Zechira B'chol Yemos Hashana and the mitzvah of Haggadah or Sipur, as it's often called, Leil Pesach. And yes, you could do it in your own words, you don't have to say Haggadah, but certain structural elements have to be present. Let me first enumerate the elements, and then we'll see their inner significance. Element number one, She'ela U'tshuva. The mitzvah of Zechira B'chol Yemos Hashana, you just make a sentence, God took me out of Egypt, there does not have to be question and answer. Leil Pesach, the narration must take place via a question and answer process. Even if you're by yourself, you have to ask questions. Now, this is, of course, the famous Manishtana, the four questions. But let me point out that if you look in the Gemara, you actually see that the Manishtana is kind of cheating. For people who can't come up with questions, it's like a Cliff Notes, right? We feed them the questions. Ideally, a person should have their own questions that they want to explore. Now, I'm not saying don't say the Manishtana. We should say the Manishtana because it's part of the Haggadah. But that's why it's so funny. Sometimes, you know, I've been at a Seder. It's really, really very, very, I mean, it's a very, very humorous idea where a kid starts asking questions, or someone asks questions, and the Baba Baya says, don't interrupt. You've got to do the Seder. It's kind of missing the boat, right? Missing the point there. Has to be questions. Okay. Now, I don't want to get into this. I mean, one has to understand an audience as well. You know, I remember, and this is maybe the occupational hazard of yeshiva boys. I remember when I was a yeshiva boy, you know, 1,000 years ago. The thing is that, you know, in yeshiva, we're very occupied in advanced Talmudic pilpulim. So some difficulty in the Rambam, some subtle contradiction in a machlokas rishonim. But many people in the audience or at the Seder table are not necessarily attuned, particularly at a late hour, to those types of subtle intricacies. I remember many, many years ago I was engaged in something, and all of a sudden I heard a very loud snore at the end of the table. So I learned to try to be a little more sensitive. So one has to know. By the way, I also want to say, even halachically, there's some very serious question. Are you mekayim the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim by a Talmudic pilpul? Because again, many say that one is not yotzeh, the concept of talking about the Exodus, by a halachic discussion of the laws of Pesach. Because that is not about the actual story. So one has to know that it's not just a question of putting your audience to sleep, it's also a question that the actual chiyuv of the night is to be much more connected to the nisim and niflaos that Hashem did, more than the halachas. Now there is a general mitzvah on every yom tov to talk about the halachas, but that would be mainly in the daytime, let's say. The night of the Seder is about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, but coming back to the main subject here, structural element number one is She'ela U'tshuva, and even if you're by yourself, question and answer. Structural element number two is that the Mishnah says you have to be maschil bignus u'misayen b'shvach. That means you must begin with the bad stuff and culminate in the good stuff. Meaning, the whole year, I just have to say Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim. Pesach night, it is not enough to talk about Geula. You must also talk about the degradation, the slavery, the oppression, the persecution. You have to be maschil bignus in order to be Messiah B'Shvach. You begin with the degradation, and then you conclude with the praise. Again, I'll go back and explain the significance of each of these. Structural element number three
is the need to integrate a narrative with the eating of special foods. This is Rabban Gamliel's statement. Rabban Gamliel said, anyone that does not explain the significance of the Korban Pesach, of the matzah, or of the maror, has not fulfilled his mitzvah. Now, what mitzvah haven't you fulfilled? Let's think about this. It doesn't mean you haven't fulfilled matzah. I do fulfill matzah, even if I don't explain it. So it doesn't mean I haven't fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, Maror. It means I haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of Sibur Yitzias Mitzrayim. That the Haggadah requires that you explain the meaning of Pesach, Matzah, Maror. That's why that's the most important paragraph in the Haggadah. Again, a little cautionary warning for the women. Rabban Gamliel's statement is shortly before we drink the second kos. And shortly before we drink the second kos is shortly before the meal. So sometimes there's a tendency to get up and move into the kitchen. Be very, very careful, because women have the same obligation as men. You don't have to keep the same timing as everybody else, but you must say the paragraph of Rabban Gamliel, and whether Hebrew or English doesn't make a difference, you say it in a language that you understand, but you must say that paragraph, or at least...
Doesn't Moshe say to us that we have to tell that your son who asked you is from the Chumash?
No, it's from the Chumash, but the Chumash does not say specifically that you have to explain the Pesach Matzah Maror. The Chumash just says you talk about Hashem taking us out of Mitzrayim. Rabban Gamliel adds the requirement that you have to explain Pesach Matzah.
Haggadah Shel Pesach doesn't come from the Chumash?
No, the Haggadah Shel Pesach does not come from the Chumash. The Haggadah Shel Pesach is an anthology. It's an anthology of many psukim, many midrashim, and the like, but the text, the actual text of the Haggadah is not in the Chumash. The Haggadah has many psukim from the Chumash.
It takes
sure.
I thought the Ikra Haggadah,
no, the Torah doesn't really say that. The Torah, Higadata Levincha, you tell your son that God took me out of Egypt. So the Torah does not go beyond that.
It's a state of the...
Yeah, it does
Thank
not.
You. Thank
yeah,
you,
yes. Okay, so we have mentioned three elements so far, right? Sheila Utshuva, Maskil Bignus Mesayem Deshvach, and Rabban Gamliel's Chiyuv to explain Pesach Matzah Umar. Now, what are we explaining here? We're explaining things that are unique to the annual mitzvah of Sipur, Haggadah, that do not apply to the daily mitzvah of Zechirah. Now, the fourth element was actually added not by Rav Chaim, but by his son, Rav Yitzchak Zev, who is known as the Brisker Rav. He's called the Brisker Rav. Rav Chaim was also Brisker Rav, but Rav Velvel, Rav Yitzchak Zev Salvechik, is called the Brisker Rav because he was indeed the last Rav of Brisk before the destruction of the Holocaust, and he was miraculously smuggled out of the Warsaw Ghetto, and he came to Yerushalayim. So the Briskers in Yerushalayim are the children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren of Rav Yitzchak Zev Salavechik. And he added that there's a fourth element. And he said, this is the hardest mitzvah of Pesach. Now, you think about this. Pesach is hard in so many ways, getting rid of chametz, and particularly the briskers are extra meticulous in all of this. But he said this is even harder than that. And that is the idea that each person must regard himself as if they themselves were taken out of Egypt. The whole year, we simply remember what Hashem did. Pesach night, we are obligated to experience redemption. And this is the statement of Chayav Adam Liros Es Atzma. A person must look at himself as if they themselves were taken out of Egypt. Now, interestingly enough, the Rambam, who gives us a text of his Haggadah, had a slightly different girsa, a single letter that changes the meaning of the word. In our Haggadah, we read, Chayav Adam Liros Es Atzma.
A person must regard himself, herself, as if they were taken out of Egypt. That refers to a personal, emotional experience of being redeemed. The Rambam changes the word liros, and he adds a hey, and he makes it laharos. And that's a tremendous difference. Laharos means a person has to show, has to behave as if they were taken out of Egypt. Meaning, according to the Rambam's Girsa, it is not referring to an inner emotional experience. It is referring to external behavior. So, for example, I drink cups of wine, I recline. So, according to the Rambam, it's a much easier mitzvah, because according to the Rambam, the chiyuv is only a behavioral chiyuv. It is not an inner spiritual state. See, laharos, you show freedom. And the Rambam says, that's why we have four cups of wine, that is why we recline. But that's not our girsa. Our girsa is, not lira, laharos. Our girsa is liros. Liros means I personally have to feel as if I'm redeemed. So, b'kitzer, this is unique to Pesach night. This does not apply any other time of the year. So as a result, we have four structural elements that differentiate Zechira, B'chol Yemos Hashanah, from Sipur. Shelo Uchuba, Maschil B'gnus Mesayim B'shvach, the need to explain Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, and finally the notion of experiencing redemption and not just remembering it.
I don't understand the Rambam in what manner. To what end, or what purpose would one have to do all these behavioral things if not to come to a place of experience and feeling? Really, all these things, behavioral things, to get you to a certain place.
Well, let me put it this way. I think it may very well be true that the Rambam would be moda that the externalities have a goal and a purpose to bring a person to an inner state. But the inner state is not a condition to a minimal fulfillment of the mitzvah. In other words, according to the Rambam, if I go through the motions and I don't achieve that state, I have done my mitzvah. Hashem, that's an easier standard. Masha Ein came like our Gersa, we are actually missing the mitzvah. Our mitzvah is not complete. So I think they both would agree as to what the ultimate purpose is. But the question is it Ma'akev, the Kiyum HaMitzvah?
So now that we've answered, as Rav Chaim would explain, the basic structural elements that differentiate Sipur from Zechira, let's try to understand the inner meaning of them a little better. And let's start with the last one first. Each person must regard themselves as if they themselves were taken out of Egypt. The question is, what sense does that make?
See, let me point out two sentences in the Haggadah that some people think are saying the same thing, but they're very, very different. In the beginning of the Haggadah, we say, if Hashem would not have taken our forefathers out of Egypt, we and our children and our children's children might still be enslaved. Therefore, we are grateful to what Hashem did for our forefathers. Otherwise, we would be enslaved or we would be assimilated, depending on what that means. Now, towards the end of the Haggadah, we have the idea that each person must regard themselves as if they were liberated from Egypt. Now put those two things side by side. Both of them are saying we have to be grateful for what Hashem did. But it's a very different thing. The first statement is simply saying, I am grateful for what Hashem did for my forefathers, because if he wouldn't have done it for my forefathers, I would be in trouble, one way or the other. But that's not the same thing as saying I have to regard myself as if I myself was redeemed. What sense does that make? I was never in Mitzrayim. I wasn't inhabited in Mitzrayim. Is it play acting? Is it method acting? You know, put yourself in the role? Lee Strasberg, method acting?
what's going on? You know, every week when I come here, I pass by a travel agency, one of the streets, and I always see this sign of daily bus tours to Egypt.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm not sure if they're doing it right now. I don't know. Are there Pesach hotels in Egypt? Can you go to Egypt for Pesach? You know, who knows? But the point is, you know, unless maybe you get there before Pesach and after the Seder we have this
stirring experience of crossing the border.
So the thing that came out during the thing in Egypt said, be careful with the pyramids, we're not doing it again.
Right, that's very good. I said that. Yeah. Now, so here, there's a powerful mashava from the Svasemis. The Svasemis, I get other Sifritas to say as well, the Svasemis tells us that the word Mitzrayim has a double meaning. Mitzrayim, of course, is a nation, the nation of Egypt, and the ancient Egyptians are extinct, they're not around anymore. But the word Mitzrayim also refers to the inner, narrow, constrictive boundaries. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Min HaMeitzar HaRasikar, I call out to God from the narrow, confining place. And the Svasemis says, each person has an inner Mitzrayim. Each person has an inner slavery from which they need HaKadosh Baruch Hu to redeem them. A person can have a Mitzrayim of anger, of selfishness, of egotism, of despair, depression, whatever it might be. And these are inner enslavements that are Mitzrayim. They are narrow, constricting, confining places that block my ability to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as the old saying goes, it's easier to take the Jew out of Mitzrayim than to take Mitzrayim out of the Jew. And the koach of Pesach is that every single year, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts into the world a power of redemption that allows me to be free from whatever it is in my life that is my Mitzrayim. So when it says each person must regard himself as if they themselves were taken out of Mitzrayim, it does not refer to the historical Mitzrayim. It's referred, now again, this is not, first of all, let me make it clear, although I hope it's obvious. This is not suggesting, as some non-religious people have suggested, that Yetzias Mitzrayim is only a metaphor. Chas v'shalom, chas v'shalom. We were slaves in Mitzrayim. We were persecuted in Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought 10 plagues on the Egyptians. There was a Kriyas Yamsuf. All of that did happen. And if that wouldn't have happened, we would not have existed as a nation. 100% true. But the Svasemis says, in addition to the literal meaning, there is also an inner Mitzrayim. Now, this is very significant because here is the way we look at time. Time, in Judaism, is understood not as a linear progression where things just move forward, but as a circular, cyclical progression where we actually re-experience. So here is the thing. If we were to ask, why is Pesach called Zman Chelusenu, the season of our freedom? Most of us would answer, it is the season of our freedom because we were taken out of Mitzrayim. That's not the right answer. It didn't become the season of freedom because we were taken out of Mitzrayim. We were taken out of Mitzrayim because it is the season of freedom. Meaning, in this Zman is freedom, is liberation, is redemption. So things happen that give freedom liberation. But kishem that there was a Yetzias Mitzrayim, every single year, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes available this kayach of geula, this kayach of redemption, this kayach of cheres, that I identify my slavery. And Hashem will liberate me from my slavery. That's why this year, in fact, it actually ties into this year. You know, this year is an Ibra year, extra month. Why do we have leap years?
So Pesach has to be in the spring.
Because Pesach has to be in the spring. Because in a lunar year, Pesach will get earlier and earlier, eventually be in the winter. We got to make sure it's in the spring. Maral says, Why is it so important that Pesach is in the spring? Who cares? I mean, well, what's the nafkamina? We're celebrating the Hebrew day of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Maral says no. The Maral says what happens in the physical world is a response to the spiritual powers God put into the Bria. Spring is also a time of freedom, of liberation, of rejuvenation. Right? It's as if the fertility of the earth is trapped in the winter, even if we don't have snow, but nevertheless things don't grow yet. And spring is the physical responding to the spiritual kochos of rebirth and rejuvenation. So Pesach is in the spring because it is the Zaman of Cheres. So if it's not the Zaman of Cheres because you're in the winter, then it's not the time of Geula yet. So you have to have a mechanism that always ensures that Pesach is in this amount of rejuvenation and renewal, which is the spring. Now, those of you from Australia or the Southern Hemisphere might say, hey, wait a second here, it's not spring, you know, there. But the answer is obviously that the spiritual kochos that Hashem puts into the Bria come from Eretz Yisrael and they spread everywhere else. So when it's spring here, that exists even in the middle of a snowstorm in Australia, or whatever it is. The kochos come not from New York, they come from Yerushalayim, and they spread. New York happens to be in the same seasons, Northern Hemisphere. Okay. So this is a very, 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 very important yesod. The yesod that when we read the Haggadah, there is a double story that is going on. There is the great moving national story of Hashem's love for the Jewish people, of Hashem's promise to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim to give us a Torah through the plagues and the Kriyas Yamsuf. That is the main story. But there is a sub-theme to the story. There is the story that applies to everybody, but there's the idiosyncratic private narrative. How each person has their slavery. Each person has their Mitzrayim. And the koach hacheres va'geula of Leil Pesach allows each person to be liberated from whatever it is that enslaves them. If I could quote an unlikely source, there was, I guess maybe there still is, I don't know, an entertainer in America, Mr. T, was his name. Again, there's no Aron HaKodesh here, so I guess I'm a little more liberal. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, well, it's covered. It's a mechitza. Okay, it's covered up. And he once said a remark that was actually maybe unintentionally profound, but it carried a certain power to it. His modality, he wears a lot of gold chains. And he was asked why he wears gold chains. And he said, my ancestors came to the United States in chains. And I want to connect myself to my ancestors. But the difference is their chains were on their legs and my chains are around my neck. Their chains were iron and my chains are gold. What is Mr. T teaching us here? Mr. T is teaching us that a gold chain around the neck can be every bit as enslaving as a leg iron around the leg. We can be enslaved to our tivus, we can be enslaved to the rat race, we can be enslaved to arrogance. These are enslavements. Again, I don't know if that's what he meant.
He
may have meant the other way. But it's really, you know, this is like the old story, you know, when the Hasidic Rebbes used to hear some ignorant shepherd play a niggun, and he would take the niggun away and elevate it. And, you know, the shepherd may not have had any of those kavanas. But sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows us to hear things that we can then incorporate in our understanding of Torah, even if that wasn't the intention of the speaker. But that's why Hashem put that into the world.
And the gold chain is also a slavery. Right? The slavery of the rat race, of competitiveness and the like. So, with this idea that every person has their Mitzrayim, and every person needs a Yetzias Mitzrayim, we can now understand the other elements of the Seder in that same way. Because essentially, the Seder might be a blueprint or an outline for how to achieve inner spiritual liberation from the Mitzrayim that enslaves you. So let's take the other three steps. She'ela u'tshuva. Question and answer. Lesson number one to being a spiritual seeker who wants to escape from the Mitzrayim is be willing to ask questions. The difference between asking a question and not is a person who asks a question wants to know, wants to grow. I want to go beyond my parameters. A person that acknowledges that spiritual life has possibilities. Now, wherever they wind up going, that's a separate decision. But the very fact that a person asks a question shows that they want to know. In fact, the Maharal makes the point, when we come to the four sons, you know, we have the famous four sons, four different personality types, and the Maharal explains that in a very, very nice way. He says, the Chacham is the child, but left after the child, it's also the person, the adult, who perceives HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the prism of intellect, analytical ability. I understand, let's say, call it the Gemara cup, or whatever you want to say. The person who, through thoughts, reflection, analysis, kind of feels connected to God. The Tam, Maral says, is not necessarily lacking intelligence, but the Tam is the one who connects to God through emotion and feeling. Those are the two modalities, the heart and the head. The Rasha is the person who relates to God with hostility and resentment. And the Ani Yodei Elisha is not the six-month-old kid, whatever it is. It's the one whose mode is apathy and indifference. So you see, you have the two good ones and the two bad ones. The good one, I connect to Hashem through my mind. I connect to Hashem through my heart. I reject Hashem with hostility and resentment. And the other one is, I am apathetic and indifferent. And the Maharal makes the point, in many ways, that apathy and indifference might even be worse than resentment. Because the person who has resentment, the Torah is at least speaking to him in some way. He doesn't want to hear the message, so he pushes it away. But it's easier. It's easier, perhaps, for the resentful person to come to Hashem than the apathetic. That's the old joke about what's the difference between apathy and ignorance, or ignorance and I don't know and I don't care, right? that's kind of it. So She'ela U'tshuva acknowledges the idea that if one is a seeker of wisdom, there is the potential to grow. But if you're not even interested enough to have questions, then you're a closed book. There's nothing to open. That is why a person who is great in Torah, we commonly call a Talmid Chacham. Think about that expression. Actually, the actual translation of a Talmid Chacham is a little obscure. Talmid Chacham can either mean a student of the wise, or it can mean a wise student. Presumably, it is an adjective meaning wise student, because the plural of Talmid Chacham is Talmidei Chachamim. Theoretically, if it's student of the wise, we could have kept it Talmidei Chacham. Right? But be it as it may, it's notable. We would call the Vilna Gaon a Talmid Chacham. What, a student? What do you mean a student? Gadol? The answer is, the idea of a student is somebody who is still in the business of learning and growing. The greatest wisdom is, I still want to learn. Now, they tell a story about Rabbi Elazar Silver, a great Gadol, he was from Europe, but he lived in Cincinnati. But his first position was in Springfield, Massachusetts. And
maybe apocryphal, and I don't want to say Lashon Hara about Springfield, but the story goes that he was fired from his show in the 1920s because the president said he was using up too much electricity at night in the show. And when Rabbi Silver said, "But I'm learning," he says, "I thought we hired a rabbi who finished his education."
Yeah.
We don't want rabbis who still have to be learning.
Yeah.
Right? Well, Rabbi Yashiv kind of high up, is over 100, and he should live and be well, and he's somehow still learning. You know? So, gee, what can you be learning after, you know, 95 years? But still, you know, apparently there's enough to do. So that's what Shelu Tshuva. Shelu Tshuva is the willingness to grow, the willingness to ask. We then come to the second element. Maschil bignus u'misayim b'shvach. Begin with the bad. Now, if we ask ourselves, why is it so important to begin with the bad? So there's really a simple answer, which is a valid answer. The simple answer is, it is the nature of Hakaras HaTov in life that we don't appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu's blessings until we experience the negatives. We don't appreciate health as much until, God forbid, there's illness. Right? We don't appreciate even a good standard of living. Right? That's why a person who had lived in poverty, or people who have gone through the Holocaust or the like, can have a much greater appreciation of life than people who are born relatively comfortable. So part of why we're maskil bignos, this is pashut pshat, is we want to relive slavery and degradation and suffering, because then we appreciate the blessings of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's pashut pshat, and that's a valid explanation. But I want to suggest something deeper. That is, instead of simply saying, I go over the bad so I'll appreciate the good, the deeper insight, like we talked about before, is to understand that even the suffering itself is something that was good for others. And how is that so? In a number of ways. The Torah says, for example, you shall love the ger, love the stranger, for you were strangers in Eretz Mitzrayim. The concept is that you acquired rachamim and empathy and compassion when you see people who are poor and people who are oppressed and people who are without influence and by the totem pole and you're, you know, prosperous and successful in life. Remember their sufferings because you were once there. We are told that Klal Yisrael acquired achdus and unity through their oppression because they recognize we have to be together. So it turns out that it wasn't simply knowing that we were freed, for which we're grateful, but to understand that Yetzias Mitzrayim gave us kinyanim, gave us spiritual qualities that we otherwise wouldn't have. You know, it's interesting how even the qualities that came to us for spiritual reasons are so deeply embedded in the Jewish psyche that even when a person leaves Torah, those qualities remain. Now, why are Jews so fixated on education? That's secular Jews. Of course, that's what they say. They say the Koreans are the new Jews. But for so many decades, right, Jewish parents were pushing their kids to go to college, etc. Well, it comes from centuries and centuries of understanding that Talmud Torah is the most important myth. It got perverted. I'm not saying college is a defensible alternative to Talmud Torah, of course not. But it got embedded in the Kishkin, so to speak, that learning is important. When Chas V'Shalom, Rachmana Litzlan, left Torah, they still had that material, and it turned into attaching to something else. Why are Jews social activists? Whether it's civil rights, whether it's apartheid in South Africa, anti-apartheid, whether it's even communism, which was obviously a wrong term. It came because Yidden have rachmanis, Yidden have compassion for people who suffer. When we see people who suffer, we feel for them. Why do you even have people who are totally misguided, who are, you know, big defenders of Palestinian terrorism?
I know.
Again, it's a perversion. It's a perversion. Don't quote me as offending you. Of course it's a perversion. But it comes from the heart of a Jew that feels rotten for anyone that suffers. That's what says it's right. The experience of being slaves taught us that we feel for people, we care for people. We have rachamim. What could they have the Chazal say that a person doesn't have rachamim for others? We have to suspect whether they're Jewish at all. How can you be a Jew and not care about the sufferings of others? So, the inner meaning of Maskel Bignus and Messiah Mishvat is to see the redemptive potential even in the adversities of life. And that is something we extrapolate to every experience we have in life, in our own private life as well. That when there are setbacks, when there are disappointments, when there's tragedies, we use them as means of growing. Again, this is similar to what we talked about before. So you see what's going on here. So we took Rav Chaim's structural elements, and based on the Sfas Emes, this teaches us that there's an inner Mitzrayim. We look at these elements as ways that help us deal with our inner Mitzrayim. Shelu Tshuva, ask honest questions, be willing to grow, challenge yourself. Maskil Bignus, see even in the setbacks of life redemptive potentials of transformation and growth. And then we come to Rabban Gamliel. Pesach Matzah Maror. Well, let's look at Maror first. Maror is remember the bitterness and the slavery. Maybe that's teaching us that one of the necessary steps to spiritual redemption is you have the honesty to acknowledge that there's some bitterness in your life. You know, people go through denial. People go through not acknowledging that there are things they need to change. Maror is the reminder. Be willing, have the courage to confront your slavery. Because the very first step to getting redeemed is admitting to oneself that there's an enslavement. Right? This is an obvious point. If you're driving and you're lost, until you know that you're lost, you're really lost. Because there's no possibility of corrective action. I remember when I first moved to Washington and I had to go to Baltimore. So I was going on 95, if you know the highways. And there's a turnoff there, so all of a sudden I started noticing the Washington Monument, the Jefferson Memorial, which I know is not on the way to Baltimore, it's on the way to Virginia. And I was just too tired to figure out what to do, so I can't even, I cannot explain this logically. But just that, well, if I just keep on driving, something will happen. Well, it actually is true, because you hit Florida, and then it does change. You know, but the point basically is, it's really a perfect example. I just did not want to admit, somehow, if I didn't admit it, it wasn't the reality. But of course, that's crazy. The reality is the reality, whether you admit it or not. So Maror says, admit, be honest, identify on its Ryan. What is it that I need to change? What is it that I need HaKadosh Baruch Hu to redeem me from? So that's Maror. Matzah highlights the idea that once you've identified, you need to take constructive action. Because what is matzah? The Maral makes the point. Chametz, first chametz represents arrogance, but one of the other things chametz represents is inertia. It's a very interesting point. If water falls on flour and you do nothing at all, chametz is what happens automatically. Matzah requires action. It's a new point that is often not made. Everyone understands chametz is puffed up. You know, that's a well-known idea. Yeah. But the Maral makes the point, chametz represents inertia. Matzah represents decisive action. That's why Chazal has a lashon. Mitzvah habal v'yadcha al tachmitzena. When you have an opportunity for mitzvahs, don't let it become chametz. Chametz is what happens when you do nothing. So here's the thing. You know, people go, let's say, to therapists for 50 years, psychoanalysis,
and they understand themselves perfectly.
They understand their history, they understand birth trauma and pre-birth trauma, you know, every event that ever happened to them. Okay? What are you going to do about it? It's easy to become momentarily inspired, but you have to concretize things in positive changes. So if maror is the cognitive awareness of what I need to change in my life, matzah is the imperative of action. Now, you may ask the following question. This is an interesting point. Gee, according to this, shouldn't we eat maror before matzah? In other words, shouldn't I eat the slavery and then know what's wrong? The answer might be the following. The answer might be a psychological idea. And that is, a person should not get involved in what their problems are until they've internalized that they have the inner capacity to change. So the matzah is that message of encouragement. Yes, a person should not internalize, well, a person should not focus on what their problems are until they've internalized the message that they have the capacity to change. So I eat the matzah, which represents the koach of action, and then I focus on the moral, which is my inner story. Because otherwise a person gets depressed, a person loses hope, a person gets so burdened with all of the problems that they have that they can't go on. If you started with moral, you might remain with the moral. You have to start with the notion of action. And then, the final lesson here is Pesach. And Pesach is an interesting korban. Pesach is a korban Pesach. That, of course, we don't have today. But the Rambam makes the point, it's machlokas in the Gemara, that a korban Pesach cannot be brought by a single person. You must join with other people, your family, or if you don't have a family, other people. Even if you have a big enough appetite that you could finish the small lamb by yourself, you are mechuyev to join up with others. And that teaches us an important lesson, that spiritual transformation requires community, requires people who share your values, who share your goals, who work together, where each one gives chizuk to the other person. You know, it says in Pirkei Avos, kenei lecha chaver, buy yourself a friend. An interesting phrase. Some say first getting a therapist, you buy a friend for 50 minutes. Others say that kenei lecha chaver is, you have to invest in friendship. If you want to have a friend, you buy a friend by being a friend to them. Because you can't expect people to be there for you if you're never there for them. So you buy their friendship by being there for them. But the Rambam has a beautiful comment where the Rambam says, why do you have to have friends? Why are friends important? And he says there are three reasons why friends are important. One is utilitarian. If your car breaks down in the middle of the night, it's good to have somebody to call. If you don't have a friend, you know, a friend can include a spouse, of course. Who do you call? That's utilitarian. Practical. The second reason, the Rambam says, is social. People get lonely. You want to have people to talk to in life. But the Rambam says there's a third reason for friendship. And that is friends. And by friends, again, I understand I'm referring to friends, I'm referring to spouse, family, all of this, the need for other people in our lives, is that they help us become the best that we're able to become. They help us become connected to Hashem. They help us develop spiritual qualities. We give each other chizuk in moments of weakness. Right? That's the highest level of friendship. In a marriage, that's why they're called Reyim Ahuvim, beloved friends, because a friend is someone. And by the way, that's a difficult friendship sometimes, because that's a friendship that sometimes requires criticism. It requires openness to being corrected, to sharing faults. It's not a easy friendship. It's not a superficial friendship. It's a deep friendship. But you know, when it truly comes from love, we were able to take it. Some person doesn't really care about me. He starts telling me all things are wrong with me. I'm going to resent it very, very deeply. And probably lash out and say worse things about them.
Yeah.
When it truly comes from love, then we're able to be makabe. So, basically, look at what's going on here. Every person has their inner Mitzrayim. And the Haggadah is the story not only of Yetzias Mitzrayim Bichlal, but of the inner Mitzrayim Bifrat. The Haggadah, therefore, has a double meaning. It is the national story of Am Yisrael, but it's also the step-by-step guide to our own spiritual liberation. And the structural elements are aids in that spiritual liberation. Question and answer. Be open to challenging your preconceptions. Maskil b'knos. See, even in the adversity of life, Hashem's redemptive potential. Pesach Matzu Morar. Morar, have the honesty and courage of confronting your slavery. Matzah, take decisive action to make those changes. And Pesach, the importance of community in making those changes. Seeking out people who have those goals, who have those she'ifos, who have those desires. Because we are, as it were, creatures of our environment. We need chaverim, we need society. Again, this can be the context of family. Ideally, that would be the best. If that's not always available for whatever reason, we try to find surrogate families. Korban Pesach. We have to find a surrogate family to be connected to in order to have that peace. So, Yisrael Hashem, I hope that for all of us, this should be as much as inner and outer gula. And we should be very
It's available here on your way out for all of you. For those who are members of the OU, you will get one in the mail. Those who are not members, you can take one. There will be an addendum in the next COVID for Israeli products. As you see, most of this is American products. There will be an addendum for Israeli products in the next COVID. Make sure you get your next card this week. Have a wonderful Pesach anniversary.
Rami Obi-Rami.
So that's awesome.
That would also be true.
I'm going to go there.